Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Specht. Hey,
hello.
It's August 1st.
I know, isn't it crazy?
Summer's half over.
I've been starting to notice the sun changes on my way to work in the early morning, because it's only in the summer months do I see sunrise, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like as the year gets towards winter, it's like I'm always arriving in the dark, yada yada yada. So it's very soon I'm going to be running out of sunrises going into work.
Yeah, no, I'm out walking the dog and the sun's just coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas before I was out walking the dog and the sun was up.
Yeah,
like nobody knows. So, not to
sidetrack too much, but Jimmy Kimmel Live, he does this thing on the first of every month. He runs a clip of all the news agencies across the states. It's August 1st. Can you believe it's August 1st? I cannot believe it's August 1st. And so he has like 20 or 30 clips, really quick clips like this.
And now, we can get on there.
Now they're all saying, oh no, we're going to get on the Jimmy Kimmel Show now. Yes, yes you are.
Too late. This is from last year, because you dodged it this year.
But yeah, so he'll do it once a month. He'll run clips. It's February 1st. I can't believe it's February 1st. Can you believe it's February 1st? No, I can't believe it's February 1st.
Can you believe it's August 1st?
No, I can't.
I can't believe.
I can't believe it's August 1st.
Yeah, if anybody wants to send this into Jimmy Kimmel, I'll give you the raw footage.
But yeah, we are walking slowly towards a nice crisp fall.
Yep.
And I hate to say it, but it's been hot this year, so I'm kind of looking forward to it.
You know what? It's the humidity has been more this year.
Mm-hmm.
Blah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Blah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't mind the heat so much as the humidity.
Yeah.
You know, I hate swimming to work.
It's when your sweat doesn't evaporate, you just feel gushy and wet. It's like, yeah. Oh, man.
When you have a shower, you dry off, you walk downstairs, and you're sweating already.
Yeah. It's like, why?
Sorry, I'm just going to work stinky. Did you have a shower day? No. I saved the water, saved my time. I was going to be stinky by the time I got here anyway, so suck it up, princess.
I always think of it as fresh sweat.
Take big gulps. Fresh. There's enough for everybody.
This sweat is fresh.
Yeah.
It doesn't stink yet.
Oh, this isn't yesterday's sweat. This is today's sweat.
This is now sweat.
Yeah. Ooh, this is Chateau Tuesday.
Yeah. I think of all the times of the year, I only have, like, thinking back as a kid, like, always the thing that sticks out in my mind is So school starts. Mm-hmm. So three things happen, and it's always stuck in my mind. I don't really remember many other seasons from growing up except events, but times of the year, it's always fall. So school has started. So I'm down on the side of the road waiting for the bus. The puddles are starting to ice over, and the apples in our apple trees are ripe. Mm-hmm. So it's like those three things tied together is like, oh, it's fall.
Yeah.
Fall's, I think, one of my favorite seasons. Spring is screwed up because of...
Oh, you don't like spring because of the bugs.
That was the point of why I was saying it.
See? We knew it. You don't like bugs.
I don't like the bugs.
For a guy that loves being outdoors.
So this is why I like winter camping.
You're pretty sissy about bugs. That's all I'm saying.
I am a bit of a wuss.
Yeah. I'm going to pick up one of those snakes I hate and beat you with it.
Yeah, exactly.
Why I ought to beat you with this snake if I dared to get close enough to it.
Anyway, oh, speaking of hot weather, your front flower bed needs to be watered.
It gets watered every day.
It's all droopy.
Yeah, we get hit full on sun front in the front of the house.
Oh, every yeah. day.
And then in the afternoon, full on in the back of the house.
Yeah.
Right, so we got to close our back curtains in the afternoon.
Oh, just so it doesn't
just so up. It just doesn't get absolutely blistering hot in here.
Yeah.
So, but oh well, is what it is. But no, we try to keep up on top of that watering thing. I would actually be out there watering right now if I wasn't in here recording a podcast. So
exactly.
You want me to water flowers? You want me to do a podcast?
Well, let's get it on. Let's
do a flower podcast. Look at these azaleas. Aren't they spectacular?
I resisted commenting at work, but two of the guys were talking about, two of the guys that sit nearest me at work, they were talking about, one of the guys had given the other guys a bunch of, I won't even be able to remember, but he said something, some kind of plant. And he says, yeah, don't forget, you got to separate them and get them in the ground soon before it's fall. And they're talking about all this. And I just wanted to, I wanted to make derogatory comments about the two guys.
Stop it.
Stop talking about flowers.
Can't we talk about monster trucks for a minute here, boys?
But I would say it in jest because I've got flowers too.
Really?
Yeah. Black-eyed Susans are up.
Nice. I got a dogwood.
You have a dogwood plant? I thought you took out all your stuff.
No, we got a dogwood. Athena upstairs on the front porch with a stick. There's my gardening. Actually, Ariana's been doing cherry tomatoes and peppers and stuff out back. And
nice.
Yeah, we got tons of sage and foxgloves and daisies. And remember a couple years ago when the squirrels planted corn and we had growing?
Yeah.
We have sunflowers growing this year.
Nice.
Right we on. Got some really talented squirrels in our neighborhood.
Anyways, back to the story.
So, what story?
Well,
was there podcast. A story? Oh, the podcast. We're doing a podcast. I forgot about that.
We're getting sidetracked here.
We don't get sidetracked. We purposely take detours. We're not asking for directions.
No, nope, we are not asking for directions.
But you know what we do need to know is we need to know when to turn back.
Yes.
See that segue?
And so
was that not fantastic?
That's a tough thing for a lot of people to do.
So I was looking at the Adventure Journal there. Justin Houseman wrote this article. Now, he wrote this on mountain climbing, hiking up mountains, like what you guys do, right?
Yep.
You, Grant, and the boys, Peter, and whatnot. He says, about 20 years ago, a man nearly died in my backcountry campsite. Which, my personal feelings is that's a bit of a drawback on a trip, having somebody die.
Yes.
You know, that's just me.
Yeah.
I was maybe 6 miles deep into Kings Canyon National Park along the Bubbs Creek Trail, one end of a popular demanding Ray Lakes loop. This was the first night of an 8-week job as part of an archaeology crew surveying the Kings Canyon zone. First night.
But that's interesting.
Eight weeks.
It's his job.
Park's head archaeologist hiked up to spend the night with us and see us off. And being a de facto park ranger, he brought his two-way radio. When the first night, a woman ran shouting into our camp near Sphinx Creek that her partner in a nearby tent was seizing. The radio helped save the man's life. I woke up to distant shouts of flashlights, expecting to see a bear when I zipped open my tent, not rangers toting a stretcher equipped with mountain bike tires to bring the debilitated man to a medical care. They wheeled him back down the trail, a trip that takes hours even while hiking normally, as he continued to seize along the way. He was airlifted to Fresno and recovered a few days later. I went looking for one of these wheeled stretchers things he's talking about. I don't think I found one. Any kind of.
It would be neat.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have to carry the weight of the guy.
Right? I later learned that what had happened 3 days before, the man set out with a girl he'd recently met to hike the Ray Lakes Loop. They'd driven up from sea level early in the morning and hit the trail midday. Some point during the second day of hiking near 10,000 feet, he started vomiting and exhibiting symptoms of altitude sickness. For reasons only they'd know, the couple continued deeper along the route, eventually crossing Glen Pass at well over 11,000 feet, rather than turning back and losing elevation.
Hmm.
He nearly died from complications brought about from altitude sickness. It's a miracle he didn't. A few years ago, a good friend nearly suffered the same fate. We were heading to one of the 10th Mountain Division huts near Vail, Colorado, 5-mile snowshoe trip that begins 9,000 feet, eventually crossing Resolution Saddle at near 12,000 feet. My friend, let's call him Neil, probably because that's his real name, had flown into Denver from... That's what I do. Let's call him Derek.
Because that's what it is.
That's his real name. Had flown into Denver from the Bay Area the night before. halfway to the hut, Neil started tiring significantly, usually unusual for him. Not suspecting he was feeling ill, we urged him to keep his pace up as it was snowing hard and we were well behind schedule. Bit further, Neil stopped and revealed that he felt nauseous and weak. At this point, we should have turned around. Still several miles from the hut with nearly another 1,000 feet of elevation gain, Neil's deteriorating condition should have set off turn back alarm bells. Instead, we kept pushing. We'd come so far, we reasoned, pushed forward by the fact that we'd committed, so we were going to finish the hike as much as the urge for bourbon and soup enjoyed in spectacular scenery at the hut. Neil made it to the hut, but spent the night sick and wheezing with wet, erratic breathing. We hoped the next day would be an improvement, but as evening set in, his breathing was worse, and his vision had clouded. He wasn't eating. Next morning, he was having powerful headaches. Miraculously, a group of Forest Service workers had skied in the previous night. One of them was an EMT and told us he suspected Neil might have high-altitude pulmonary edema, H-A-P-E. We hastily assembled our gear the next morning, set off on a nearby snowmobile road where if Neil collapsed, we'd be able to flag down a passing rider. Neil made it down the mountain and spent the night receiving medical attention in Vail. We should never have let Neil get that high up the mountain when he was clearly suffering. The seizing man in King's Canyon should never have pushed higher once he was clearly ill. Both of these cases of high altitude pulmonary edema were products of the sunk cost fallacy.
Mm-hmm.
Once you've invested so much energy in getting that far along a trek, it's incredibly difficult to pull the plug and turn around. I'd always associate this sort of thing with avoidable deaths on high mountain peaks, where the urge to press forward overwhelms the climber, pushing them past the point of safety once they've invested so much time, energy, and money in reaching their goal. And that's the big thing right there, is the money.
Well, it's you know? Not... I think there's more... So I'll take a different route than money. So if you're in a group of people and if you feel that you're not tip-top condition and you might want to turn around and you got like 3, 4, 5 other people with you, and so you backing out affects the entire group.
Yes.
Yeah. So suddenly you're like making a decision for everybody. It's like, no, I'm going to push through. And so it happens to a lot of people. You get, I can't remember what they call it, like, but like people in Everest, they get focused on hitting the peak, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a very narrow focus, and they, a lot of people walk themselves to death up that mountain.
Blinders on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's way too goal oriented, or it's not. So it's either goal oriented, or it's just you don't want to affect the rest of the group.
Yeah,
like you get out there, and it's like, well, if I turn around now, at least one or two others in the group are going to have to turn around with me because I can't go back alone. And we're all sharing gear, so I have the stove, and I've got the fly for the tent, and yada yada yada. So you're sharing gear, sharing the load, sharing the. So it's. It's one of those things. It's like, man, I don't feel... So I would see that you would tend not to even mention it. It's like, no, I'm fine. I'm going to push through.
Yeah, see, I'm sort of the other... If I know all of a sudden I am not feeling...
But you may not recognize it as life-threatening.
Yeah.
You may feel like, oh, I'm just really exhausted. I got to drink more water or...
And see, the headaches wouldn't be a clue for me because I get migraines since like, I was 3 years old. I'll get migraines for like a week and not think anything of it these days. So if I'm climbing that high and I start getting these massive headaches, I'm not thinking anything.
Yeah, you're not thinking, oh, it's right? edema or whatever.
But if you start like you're wheezing and wet cough and,
yeah, yeah. coughing
and all
up
that
blood.
Sort of stuff, yeah. you might have an issue there, right?
Yeah. I've heard that people on when they do their first practice runs, they go to base camp at Everest, they do their first few practice runs before the weather window opens, and so they'll go up a few thousand feet and come back down, go up, come back down. So they're
acclimatize.
Trying to acclimatize, yeah. And people who do suffer this, the edema, they cough up a bubbly, like bubbly blood, foamy mm-hmm. blood is coming up. They'll cough and it's like, oh, there's foamy blood coming out of my throat, right?
Yeah.
And it's your lungs are starting to fill up with liquid and you're coughing it up.
And you need to get out of there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because once you get to that condition, like, things are going to get worse pretty quick.
See, I think I've been on canoe trips before mm-hmm. where things start getting, like, with weather and stuff like
yes.
that. I ended yeah. up in one canoe trip in October where all of a sudden these ice storms came in, which weren't supposed to be happening. Because when I got back to the park office, they're like, we had no clue this was coming in either.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm thinking, did I miss a weather report or something?
Yeah.
Or,
so
nope,
do you push just, on or do you so turn around?
So I got to my campsite that night and saw how bad it was getting. And the next day I just backtracked and came out.
Yeah.
But that was like a day's paddle from my car.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Were you also solo?
I was solo as
well.
That
makes the decision easy if you're alone.
Yeah. But what if I was on a canoe trip way up north and I'd spent 24 hours driving.
Thousands and thousands of dollars.
$1,000 for the flight in.
Yeah.
I was already a week into the trip. I still had 2 weeks left of the trip. Am I going to, I'll just stick it out. I'll see how things go for the next few days. And those few days could be it. So I think it all depends on the situation.
It does. And it's always different.
You really got to sit back and think, is this the time I press that little button? Or do I find, I mean, the other thing is going to be, okay, in this case, like the mountain sort of deal, sort of different than when we're paddling. Okay, I just got to get up another 1,000 feet, and then it's all downhill from there.
Yes, I just got
to
go
so
over
that. So do I go up that 1,000 feet, and then it's all downhill, and I can get to safety?
Mm-hmm.
In paddling, okay, it's actually closer for me to continue on the trip. So those things sort of things.
There's a lot of things going to every decision.
Yeah.
But for the most part, I think depending on the expedition, the type of trip you're on, to back out, it costs the entire group, could cost them, everybody, their goal, their trip. Or it's like if you have to be rescued, it changes everything. So it reminds me. So when West Hansen was doing his first attempt at the Northwest Passage, the woman with them, I can't remember her name, but she,
Tracy Lynn Martin?
No.
I know she...
No, it was the woman that had the U.S. Air Force pilot husband, and she... West Hansen, Jeff Wust, and...
Oh, yeah, anyway, yeah.
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 So this woman, she was chronic seasick, so she was not able to get...
Right.
She wasn't able to get enough calories into her to continue paddling, and so it became a problem. It's like, well, if you can't overcome the seasickness, you can't paddle all day, and so you're risking the entire thing. So she ended up flying out, and him and Jeff ended up getting partway, but then they couldn't carry as much food as they needed because there was one less canoe or one less kayak, and they had singles. And so they learned a lot of lessons the first attempt about the capacity in a dual kayak and more people, more bigger kayaks and yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, Tracy Lynn Martin's where he was with Freya Hoffmeister.
Yes.
That's it. I knew they were all up there. They're all up there. We're not.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's it. You got to sit there and start wondering, because, I mean, like you say, does someone get rescued and the rest continue on? Or are you making that decision for your whole group? Okay, we're done. And we're all out of here. Right. So at the end of this, he says, now when I plan backcountry trips that might take me into high elevations or out into inclement weather that can hamper progress, I bake a turnaround point into my plans. Because really, the only thing worse than not finishing a trip because I turned around for safety's sake is not finishing a trip because of injury or worse.
Exactly. Like, there's risks, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? I think this is sort of a good thing to have people thinking about right now, because there's a lot of people doing the meanest link and doing these big trips now. I just see longer and longer trips being shown on YouTube now.
Yeah.
That people are taking these big extended trips and, you know, you got to know when you're on these trips, it's not all like every single YouTube video.
Yeah.
You know, things happen.
Things out of your control.
You got to be ready to make that decision.
You don't have 100% control. Nope. You may think you have everything nailed down, but you don't.
No, Mama Nature comes out and plays. And
so it was, so in 2022, it was Wes Hansen, Jeff Wust, and Rebecca Feaster.
That was it, Rebecca.
We met her in Ottawa.
Yeah.
And then, so then in 2023, it was Wes, Jeff, Eileen Visser, and Mark Agnew.
Yes.
And then the ground crew, Barbara Eddington and Tom McGuire. There we go. Barbara's his sister. Tom McGuire's a friend.
Yep.
So I wanted to get the name because I already mentioned this. Like, I can't not mention the people.
See? And you wonder why Kevin Callan can't remember Brian, Jim, Fred, Derek. So if you're going out on trips, think about that.
Yeah.
Is there a turnaround point? If things are getting too hard,
yes,
then don't be afraid to turn around. And
depending on the challenging nature of your specific trip, always think about, well, you know, if we get to this point or if we get beyond this point, I know there's that logging road there we can back out on, mm-hmm. or I got my spot, or I've got my whatever
Garmin GPS. Or something.
Yeah, yeah. We've got all this stuff for emergencies if there's an emergency, but if I just need to back out because I'm injured, but I'm not rescue injured, I'm going to self-rescue, then plan for alternate routes. I'm going to shorten the loop. I'm not going to do the full loop. I'm going to do a shorter loop and truncated loop to come back early because maybe it's too far to backtrack.
Yep.
Or if backtracking means going upriver, I'm not going to do that. So you should always plan your routes, plan your river trips and stuff with backouts. Have them as a consideration. Like if you, like Moosonee Moose Factory, like there's so many spots where you could have jumped out and flagged down a train.
Yeah.
Right? If something had happened, it's like, hey, train, stop.
Hello. Pick me up, choo-choo.
Exactly.
Yeah. I've been on trips before where I've had to turn around because I've come up against dry riverbeds.
Oh.
And it's just like, okay, this is getting narrower, shallower and shallower and shallower. And all of a sudden, there's no water left.
Wait a sec.
And I don't know how far I would have to portage all that gear to the next bit of water.
Am I portaging for 80 kilometers or whatever, right?
Yeah, you don't know. So it's just like, you know what? I had a great time seeing what was behind me.
Yeah, I'll look at it again.
I'm just going to turn around, maybe take another little route back and around and check the other side of the lakes and stuff like that. And mind you, there's also days where I've been on trips and I'm like, oh, this, it's like, not even noon, and I'm already where I was supposed to be tonight. So, I'll just come out a day early. Whatever, you know.
I'm done.
But you gotta be thinking about that safety as well.
You know? Exactly.
And you would rather finish a trip than not.
Exactly.
Finish the trip.
And there are various,
one way or the other.
Yeah, there's various consequences to not finishing the trip.
And, okay, just to throw the last little bit on. Say you don't say anything, and then you're way out there, and your friends have to deal with the outcome of you not saying anything.
They have to collect up a bunch of rocks to keep me away from the bears.
There's your cairn.
Yeah.
But then they're sitting there for the rest of their life.
Thinking about the dead guy.
What could we have done? Why didn't we notice it? Why didn't he say anything? Do you want to throw your friends into that?
Exactly.
Well, you might. Yeah, so there's that aspect of it as well. So know your limits, play within it, as they say. If you're not feeling 100%, speak up. It could just be because you need a night's rest.
Yes.
And you get over that, or somebody goes, oh, that happened to me, do this.
Yeah, so an example of that, I was, when I lived out in BC on Vancouver Island, we were going to climb the Golden Hind in Strathcona Park. We were doing a difficult route. And one of the guys, like, we were like 4 days in, and he started limping. It's like, hey, what's up? What's going on? It's like, oh, I got a blister. So, oh, well, let's take a look at it. We can fix it now. Yeah, it's fine. It's been there for 2 days now. I'm just walking it off. It's like,
you can't walk a blister off.
You can't walk a blister off. And so we, fortunately, like I had moleskin, so we cleaned it, put some antibiotic stuff on it, and it was all broken open blister on his heel. And it's like, dude. And so I talked to the entire group. I said, listen, if you become injured, you have to say something immediately because his blister could have become infected and then we'd have to call in a rescue. So we need to know when you become injured so we know we can make certain decisions Moleskin, he was, oh, this is amazing. It doesn't hurt anymore. It's like, dude, this could have been 2 days ago.
Yeah.
Right?
You're lucky we didn't find some Boy Scouts looking for their amputation badge.
Exactly.
You're up.
Yeah. So he had a pair of boots that weren't appropriate for lengthy hikes like that, and we all knew it. He showed up for the trip, and it's like, you're hiking in those? So they were just like casual walking boots,
right?
Like they had like a velvety whatever.
Ooh,
yeah. Fancy. So it's like, oh, those are nice shoes, but are they going to be okay? Oh yeah, I've had these for a couple years now. It's like, oh. Well, that's a bad sign, too. They're way broken in.
Right?
No support.
Well, see, these are the flip-flops.
Yeah. But, like, you have to be prepared.
Yeah.
Like, something as simple as a blister could change things.
Everything.
But you can fix it instantly, or you could ignore it, and it'll change the trip.
Well, even think on a canoe trip. You're into the boat, out of the boat, into the boat, out of the boat.
Yeah.
Walking the portages.
Yeah.
And depending on where you are, some of those portages are just brutal.
Yeah.
And you're just ripping that foot to crap.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. So, or you get a stick rammed up your toenail and it's like, oh, I'm just going to walk it off. No, let's pull it out now. It'll take us an hour. We can have a lunch break, pull it out. We'll bandage it up, put some duct tape on it so nothing else gets in, right? Because last thing you need is an open wound and walking through some swamp water with beaver poop in it, right? That'll get into your bloodstream.
Yeah, good times now. Yeah.
But
don't
it's
you
like,
threaten
yeah.
me with a good time.
But like you said, know your limits.
Yepers.
And it's no one to turn back, which is the whole point of this Justin Houseman's article from Adventure Journal.
Yep.
It's like, know your limits.
So on to some better news, funner news.
Funner.
Two men from London have raised more than 50,000 pounds.
That's a lot of weight.
89,000 Canadian. Yeah, I wish. Because I got about half a ton of bricks out there could sell for charity after completing what is billed as the world's longest paddle race. Hector Bevan and Charlie Goodwin finished the Yukon 1,000 mile or 1,600 kilometer race from Canada to Alaska. We've talked about this race before.
Is it the same route that the other Yukon races go through?
River Quest? I think the River Quest does part of this.
Part of it.
Yeah. Pair raised funds for the Royal Marsden Cancer Charity following the treatment of Hector's late father, Hugh, for prostate cancer at the Royal Marsden. They completed the race in 7 days, 6 hours, 25 minutes, placing third among canoe-based teams. The race has a cutoff time of 9 days and 18 hours. Couple paddlers from New Zealand won this year's race with a time of 6 days, 23 minutes. Second fastest kayak time ever. People are just boogieing.
So I'm curious, with these cutoff times, you come in at 12 days, but your time doesn't count?
Well, I think it's 9 days, and then they go and collect everybody.
Get off the
water.
You're
going to take four extra days. No, race is done. Because there's checkpoints, right?
Yeah.
So they'll,
yeah, that's true,
if
too.
You're not going to make the 9 days, they'll just say, you're not continuing.
You're done.
Yeah. Well, you're not allowed to continue.
I'm making the rest of the trip a camping trip then.
Right? I'd be doing that. We want to help other men like Dad have extra time and better outcomes. He thought I was mad as the race involves paddling for up to 18 hours a day in some of the most isolated landscapes in the world. Oof. But if we're going to do it, he said we should raise money for the Royal Marsden Cancer Charity, as the Royal Marsden had given him years of extra life after his cancer diagnosis. The extra time Dad had meant he was able to be at my wedding, which will always be a special memory. He was on treatment for 8 years and made the most of his time. He wanted to grab the bull by the horns and just live life fully. He climbed Himalayan peaks, sailed the Southern Ocean, cycled up mountains around the world. Bizarrely, having cancer gave him the extra zest for life. You don't know what you got till it's gone.
Exactly.
Grueling Yukon 1000 race begins in Whitehorse, the capital of Canada's Yukon Territory, and concludes at the Dalton Highway Bridge in Alaska. Only 30 teams are permitted to participate each year.
Oh, wow. They limit the amount of people that can
go. This is the one that you have to send your resume in, and they send you a message going, hey, welcome, or
you did not make the cut.
You suck.
Exactly.
Yeah, you didn't make this race either, Derek.
College university rejection letter.
Right?
Thank you for applying.
Yeah, well, we're sorry to inform you at this time. So as we know, summer is the season of paddling races. Lots of little ones, local ones, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Besides the Yukon 1000 in the last couple of weeks, the MR340, the Missouri River 340-mile race, world's longest nonstop river race, starts at Kaw Point Park in Kansas City, ends 340 miles downstream in St. Charles, just outside St. Louis. It just ran from July 23rd to 26th. 11 paddlers from 37 states and 3 countries in 411. That doesn't... I think I missed a number there. 411 paddlers?
Maybe.
Oh, sorry. No, 611 paddlers, 37 states. Yeah, I cut off a number there.
Oh, 600. Okay.
That makes more sense.
Yeah.
Now, we're looking at our notes. It says 11 paddlers from 37 states. Okay. I'm not a mathematician here.
Part of this guy's right arm from that state.
Dude was standing in 2 boats.
So 611
while
paddlers.
While towing 6 more. 611 paddlers from 37 states, 3 countries, 411 boats. Yeah, 11
that makes a lot more sense.
Yeah. Started the race.
Why'd they be towing so many boats?
They were just destroying them.
Yeah.
Every time they destroyed a boat, they got a new one. The people doing this race sucked. 322 people finished. 65 did not start. 86 did not finish.
So did not start. I wonder.
I guess they didn't show up.
Some sort of planning thing failed, fell through.
Yeah. So the Missouri River 340 just happened. It's a grueling one too. I know we talked before. We should do one like this.
Mm.
I think I would do this one before I did the Texas Water Safari.
Texas because Water Safari sounds nasty. Well,
that one's got the heat and the gators.
And the gar fish,
yeah,
that are like gators,
yeah,
and the heat and the humidity and
yeah,
whoa,
yep, yeah, it would the heat would be the part that killed me down there,
yeah,
in the Texas mm-hmm. Water Safari, yeah, and knowing me, I'd probably punch a gator just because I'd be pissed off at that point of night after hallucinating through the gators, just take one on,
yeah.
The other one that's happened just now was the world's toughest row. This one, we've talked about this a while back. There's a Pacific Ocean and an Atlantic Ocean challenge. The Pacific Ocean is the challenge that will take you more than 2,800 miles west from Monterey, California to Hanalei Bay, Hawaii. That's the one that just happened, finished few days ago.
Yeah. Very recently, within the last week.
Yeah. The Atlantic Ocean, a challenge that will take you more than 3,000 miles west from San Sebastian de la Gomera, Canary Islands, to English Harbor, Antigua, and Barbuda.
And that's the one that
Cyril Darimo is over that way. He's heading over there right now, and he's going to be starting in September at some point.
So he's not doing the race. He's
no, he's doing just doing route, it by himself, solo.
Solo yeah. trip, yeah.
Yeah. These ones here tend to be teams of people doing them. The Pacific Ocean Row started June 8th and just finished last weekend. One, two, three. There was 8 boats that started, only 7 finished. The Salty Sappers finished in 36 days, 6 hours, 49 minutes. There was two of them did it in 37 days, 2 of them did it in 38 days, 41 days. 40 days, 41 days, and the last group finished 47 days, 17 hours, and 37 minutes.
Are they supported?
I don't think so.
When Cyril did his route, he carried...
totally unsupported.
He made water, so he had 2 different water makers to filter out the salt. But he carried all of his food. He was unsupported.
See, so, I think if they were supported, I got to think they'd be carrying a lot. They wouldn't be as big because they're rowing the same type of big sleep-in sort of kayak that he is, right? So, yeah, I got to think that it's unsupported.
So the Instagram post or whatever is that Alan shared? I think it was Alan.
Yeah.
So which of this group was them?
United Row.
United Row. Yep.
So they were the last team to show up, and they finished at night. So the two of them are standing on their kayak there with the flares going.
So that's eight groups finished. I thought only seven finished.
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight.
Yeah, I counted eight as well.
Yeah. No, the article said eight started.
Hmm.
Seven finished.
I wonder who of the ones that are labeled finished didn't finish. Didn't finish. Anyways, whatever.
Maybe they were having typos too.
And I remember seeing them mentioning that as they arrived, they had hoped to time their entry so that they came in during the day so that family and friends could welcome them on the beach. They come in at midnight, and they said it was even better because there was bonfires on the beach and they could hear people cheering in the darkness. And so they said it was even more special coming in the darkness.
In the dark. So yeah, there's some big ones out there that if you're really into water racing, some of these paddling things, that you can actually look forward to.
47-day race.
Right?
47 days.
WorldsToughestRow.com. If you want to find out more about the Pacific and Atlantic Ocean one. Yeah. It runs every year. Yeah. And MR340.org if you want to see the Missouri River 340-mile race. More information on that one. And get ready to do it next year.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Speaking of races, have you been watching any of the Olympic races and stuff?
I haven't watched a single second of the Olympics.
I've been watching some of the canoe and kayak slalom and stuff like that. And I made the mistake of watching the surfing.
Oh.
Oh, my God. I would rather watch paint dry.
Is that bad?
You know what? Because they got 30 minutes. There's two of them out there in the water. They have 30 minutes to catch as many waves and stuff. But 20 plus minutes is just them sitting on their board waiting for that wave to come in. And like one's allowed to, I guess there's order on who gets to do the first wave.
Who gets to drop in. Yeah.
That sort of thing. And if they start paddling and the wave's not what they want, they stop. So they still have first dip where someone else could have grabbed it. I won't be watching that again. It's cool to watch. I like watching the surfing when they're actually surfing.
What's the time difference? It's like 6 or 8 hours, isn't it?
Can
you even watch it during the day here?
In the mornings.
In the mornings. Yeah. Early morning, yeah.
So don't tell my boss, I'm watching it at work.
Maybe that's why I haven't seen it because it's like...
But you can watch you got CBC Gem. They got all the highlights and everything on there.
Not at work.
Highlights? No, after, in the evening.
Yeah, I could do that.
Yeah, just watch the highlights because they cut out all the boring bits.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
That guy sucked. We're not going to show him on highlights.
Yeah, in 3 minutes you can see all of the surfers.
Right? There you go. So, yeah, check out the Olympics racing. That's been going pretty good, so enjoying that. And John Jacoby, a world-renowned adventure racer, has put together an article about the paddling portion of adventure racing, if we want to continue on this racing sort of stream. Adventure racing has come a long way since its inception, where the only participants were generally found hanging about reading back issues of Wild magazine. Nowadays, it has moved into the Australian sporting landscape and has become accessible to anyone with a bit of drive to do something a little different. We have convened a roundtable discussion and assembled some of the best minds to get you prepared for your first dig at becoming an adventure racer. Now, they do all the bits, different bits of adventure racing, but he talks about the paddling. So in order to get into adventure racing, the paddling portion. Number one, go paddling. Seems silly to say, but you'd be surprised how many people turn up to an adventure race having either never been in a boat or only paddled a few times. The recommendation is to do it at least a 4-week preparation paddling, a minimum of 2 to 3 times a week. Practice in all conditions too, particularly if your race is in the ocean, and don't just paddle out and in. Practice across the swell. You'll soon learn how to get back in when you fall out, which is a skill of its own. Let's go to this adventure race. Have you ever paddled? No. We're in.
Well, it's like triathlon or something, but what they do is they change the swimming to a paddling section for a lot of them. I've done the Storm the Trent adventure race, probably 2005, 2006, I think. Way back when.
Way back in the day.
Yeah. And so it was, I can't even remember the distances, but it was mountain biking. So the cycling portion was mountain biking and muddy trails and long road runs and stuff. And then there was running and there was canoe paddling. So yeah, that's my current canoe, my 14 foot red holy cow canoe. It was in that race.
Huh. See, I would just absolutely hammer the canoeing, hammer the mountain biking, and then hope I've got such a great lead that the running doesn't hold me back.
Yeah. But it was very entertaining. And like you said, people without experience in canoes, like, you could tell who was...
Well, you got some of these races now, like Algonquin Outfitters has the race and that, and these guys are showing up in these marathon canoes. And,
yeah.
Like, they're running and jumping into the boat as they hit the water.
Yeah, save every second.
Yeah, these guys are, you know, they're not Joe Blow here. These are, you know.
Yeah, when we did the, like, for the canoe portion, it was like, okay, let's put our life jackets on. We should have an energy bar right now.
Yeah.
You know.
These guys are absorbing one, sliding into their jackets as they're jumping into the canoe.
Exactly.
Yeah, right. Number two, pick the correct boat for your ability and the conditions. Too many people paddle a boat that is too tippy for them, and this leads to disaster. Start with a stable plastic ski and work up to an ocean racing craft as you become more advanced. If you're on a ski that is too narrow for your ability, then you won't be able to take an effective stroke and will spend the whole time either in the water or wobbling along, taking small strokes in an effort to stay upright. I've seen some of these surf skis.
Hmm.
There's no way I'd fit.
No, like, I know.
They're way too narrow for me.
Yeah.
You know, I'd be holding my arse cheeks on each side of it. The end time will be far faster if you're on a heavier, more stable ski than the one you can't paddle well. Either borrow or hire a stable craft to begin with, and once you become more proficient, you can invest in a better craft. All paddles are different too, so it's best to find one you like, buy it, and use it every time you paddle. For adventure racing distances, then it's far better to have a shorter paddle with a smaller blade. Longer paddles and larger blades are for sprint flat water kayaking and will just tire you out and make you blow up and inefficient in distances over a couple of kilometers. Number three, training with a group. Find a group to train with, such as local canoe or lifesaving club. You're more likely to get out there and practice if you have people to go with at a set time a day each week. It's important that there is someone within the group who can give technique advice, as like swimming, paddling technique is all important. It doesn't matter how big and strong you are. If you don't have the right technique, then you won't paddle well. It's about using your core and not your arms. So those are his tips if you're looking at getting into adventure racing.
And I think this is a good point to make for him, like, because a lot of people, like, people do swimming and running and biking and stuff. It's common. Anybody who's into this kind of stuff has probably done a triathlon or, you know, Ironman or something like that. Not a lot of people have experience in a canoe. If you're used to doing the normal triathlon, you're not, I guess I should practice with a canoe. And so
And it wouldn't, if I'm looking at a race, like a triathlon or an adventure race or something, and I'm looking at what the
different
events are.
Yeah.
If I can't do something, I'm not signing up. It's like, donate eating. Once you know how to master paddling, it's time to check out the other sports: mountain biking, swimming, and trail running.
Mm-hmm.
Learn those ones.
Adventure races are fun. There's a new one out now, too, that's somewhat similar. It's Tough Mudder. I get a bunch of people at work do Tough Mudders. And so it's like Johnny Stinson used to do Tough Mudder. And
there's a giant mud course.
Yeah, it's a mud course. Yeah, it's like
going under barbed wire.
Yeah, and you're doing the stuff like an army training type thing. You're rolling tires, but not the round way. And
my buddy did it on behalf of his mom. He had a pair of like dark welder's glasses on. His mom was very like legally blind.
No.
And he had a buddy lead him through the course. They did it in Ottawa.
Oh.
So he did it basically blind.
In honor of his mom.
In honor of his mom.
Nice.
And his buddy led him through the course.
Very cool.
I would have believed. He says it was hilarious.
have you ever seen the Paralympics and stuff when they do the blind 100 meter, 200 meter,
whatever? No.
So these blind racers need a guide.
Right.
So they're ripping down the course in the oval, and they've got somebody on their elbow. And so, so obviously the guy who's racing with the blind individual
has to be able to keep up.
Has to be able to keep up, exactly. And there is a lot of trust there. It's like, because the blind person is counting on the guide to not only keep up with them, guide them, talk them through it, but also not to run them into a wall or something, right? It's like, and
I'm out.
So you see these people doing these races in the Paralympics, and it's like, it's really fascinating to watch because the blind person is so counting and trusting on the guide.
Well, you got to think of how much they've trained too, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. They would be, if you're in the Olympics doing this.
And see, if I was one of those guides and the guy I was leading wasn't keeping up to pace, I'd be too tempted to pick him up and just start carrying him. Come on, buddy. Come on, pick it up here.
But it's impressive. And the level of trust you'd have to have to do that is, it's incredible.
Yeah.
Oof. But good for them to choose.
Be out there and doing it.
I want to run. You can't see. Well, I'm going to run. I need a guide.
Dude's got no legs and does it?
Yep. Yeah.
Right? Continuing on this racing theme this evening, and reminiscent of the nude dude from last week being rescued.
Okay, but this guy's not nude, is he?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay.
Visiting his two sons in Perth, retired aid worker Ken Dinham entered as a competitor in what organizers call the Doctor. It's the world's biggest downwind paddling race, 27 kilometers from Rottnest Island to Sorrento Beach in Western Australia.
Downwind? Why do they call it downwind?
I guess you're going downwind.
You're going to have to read up on this.
At the 11-kilometer mark, Mr. Denham was hit by a big wave and knocked him from his ski. It was all downhill from there. His leg rope snapped, so he reached for his emergency flare. When I pulled the flare, the cable came straight out of the flare and absolutely nothing happened.
Oops. That was my last-ditch attempt.
He thought he was alone. He thought he might die. Until he spotted an Australian submarine. I could see them, but how could they see me? He says. But a sharp-eyed member of the crew had spotted Ken, and the sub changed course to check his welfare. There's the Australian Navy within 150 meters of me and a rescue boat. I just could not believe my luck.
I know, right?
What's the chances?
What are the odds, exactly?
Right? There are a string of safety measures surrounding the annual race, high visibility hats and life jackets, leg ropes, flares. Apparently the leg ropes and flares didn't do them too good.
Mm-hmm.
And several safety boats, including submarines, apparently. Competitors are counted into and out of the water, but Mr. Denham's concern was he wouldn't be missed until the end of the race, and that could have been too late. So I'm gonna be thinking, if he was all alone, he may have been last. Just throwing that out there.
But they could also, you're talking ocean, so you're not talking like river or lake. So
yeah, but if you look at,
you could be a huge distance.
If you look at Rottnest Island and to where they're heading towards Sorrento, you got to think they're all within.
They might get funneled in.
Mind you, when he's talking about big swells, too, we may.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You could be 100 feet away and not see the person.
Yeah. He's probably in last. Fellow competitor Brett McDonald said, when you lose contact with your craft, you become a swimmer, and you are very hard to see in the ocean. Mr. Denham's partner, Fran Siverstein, said she and her sons and his sons grew concerned when they didn't see him coming out of the water. I consider myself a very lucky man and a very happy man, he said of his miracle rescue. How cool would that be?
Sure, that would be cool. You get to be saved by
the
military and the submarine, but how uncool would it be to be out there on the open ocean and they go, periscope up,
blink,
chop your canoe right in half. Well, there is the, the U.S. military off of Hawaii, they did this was like 10 plus years ago. Anyway, so they're off of Hawaii doing maneuvers, and they did one of those emergency blows where the submarine pops out of the water quick.
Yep.
Anyways, they come up underneath a tourist boat.
Really?
The tourist boat sunk. There's minor damage on the submarine, but the tourist boat sunk, and they lost a few people, and it was like,
really? Oops.
Yeah.
Well, because, I mean, I don't think the periscope, like, looks up.
No, it doesn't. So
how do they know?
So you have a sonar operator that's listening for propellers, engine sounds, so they're listening. So apparently it's really good. You can.
But if the boat was just sitting there looking.
If it was just sitting there, they wouldn't have heard it. Mm-hmm. Or he might have. A lot of these sonars are also, or the listening devices are directional too. Maybe they.
Forward they're down?
They're pointing only forward, like they're looking for surface targets and stuff, mm-hmm. right? Anyways, yeah, so unfortunately, a few tourists. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you're in the middle of the ocean.
But let me tell you, think this. If you're just, you've just lost your kayak,
mm-hmm.
and you've got your life jacket on, no way to communicate,
yeah.
and you're sitting there.
How terrifying.
Off Australia.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, there's going to be a shark any minute. And all of a sudden, you see something big and gray. And you're thinking, I'm dead. And also,
that's a really big shark.
Yeah. Well, you're seeing this big gray submarine coming at you.
Yeah.
You're going to be crapping yourself thinking that is the biggest shark I've ever seen.
Yeah. So,
and you're preparing for a fight.
I'm going way off stream here. So think about this.
I think that was 20 minutes ago, buddy.
Think about this. So you're out there doing this race, and it's like a Russian sub.
Ooh.
Just scooting around. Hey, there's a swimmer in the water. Well, we can't break operational security. Let him be. Right?
Yeah.
Right? It's like, oh, I just saw a periscope go by, but
hello. Grab on.
Yeah, grab on.
Right?
Please don't dive.
Just put your hand over it.
Yeah, block the periscope.
You can't see anything. What the heck?
What's going on?
What are you seeing? Nothing.
I see fingers.
It's night. I see one finger.
I think it's a five-legged starfish. Yeah. I don't know what's going on here.
I'd be sitting there thinking there's going to be a shark coming out, and then you see this big gray thing coming up from the depths. Oh, good thing I wore the brown shorts today. So, yeah, rescued by a submarine.
Yes.
That's this week's rescue.
That's very cool.
Poker paddles.
Yes, I've never heard of a poker paddle before. I've heard of it like motorcycles. I've heard of
like the poker run.
Like power boats, poker runs and stuff like that. But I've never heard of people doing it by canoe or by kayak.
I've been seeing an awful lot of them. So basically what they do is they set up five different
locations
that, like, you got to check into.
Yeah.
And you launch your canoe, kayak, center paddle, or whatever it is. Participants have to hit all five of these, and when they get there, they draw a card from a deck.
Yeah.
And they, some of them, depending how many people are there, you keep the card.
Mm-hmm.
Others, okay, there's your card. You write it down on your scorecard, and you put it back in the deck for the next person could potentially draw it as
Get the same card, yeah.
Participants will build a poker hand by paddling to specified locations to draw cards and returning to the start to play their hand against other participants.
That's kind of cool.
Participants will draw a card at five predetermined locations. Mark it on their scorecard. Locations may be visited in any order. Only one card may be collected at each location. Complete hand is formed by visiting all five locations. Each participant must play a five-card hand. In the event of a tie, the winner is determined by time. Ooh. So some of them are races.
Yeah.
Like, I know with the big poker runs, they had the big cigarette boats out in Kingston, I saw one year. And they're just ripping up. They come, like, all of a sudden you hear this massive noise. And these boats are just coming in. They pull up to the harbor. They get a car. They're gone again. So it's a race. Not all of them are, though. But if it's a race, if there's a tie, it's determined by who crossed the finish line first.
Yeah.
If it's not a race, then the prizes may be split.
Yeah.
Because a lot of them I find I've been seeing are, you know, it's a $100 prize. So, okay, you get 50 bucks, you get 50 bucks sort of deal.
It's for fun. We don't want to race.
Yeah.
Or it's for fun. We don't want people trying to push too hard.
Well, there's a lot of family-friendly ones, too.
We don't want heart attacks out there.
Yeah. There was one where, you know, there was the parents were in a canoe, their kid was in a kayak, your daughter was on, on a stand-up paddle board. Mm-hmm. So they're not racing.
No.
You know? Unless dad's there. See ya, suckers!
Push the kid in the water.
Gone like a shot. Some have wild cards available to be won or purchased, like 20 bucks a piece, limit two sort of deal. Yeah. So you can make, you know, if you're one card away from getting a full house or something, then wild card. Poker paddles tend to be used as fundraisers and charge a small entry fee, like 10 bucks or something. So.
Very
cool. That's just something I've been hearing a lot about lately.
I haven't heard about it at all.
I've heard about them in previous years, but it seems to be a lot of them around this year. And I think that's all I've got this week. Yeah.
Excellent.
That is it. A whole bunch of racing stuff this
week. I know. We hit all
I didn't realize it was going to be all racing stuff.
But. So it was all about...
Racing!
Difficulty, racing, rescues.
Rescues while racing. And playing poker while racing.
And the only time we talked about non-paddling stuff was when we got distracted.
By flowers and plants and stuffs. Oh, Tracy, I went to bed last night, and Tracy texts me because she was coming home late. There's a skunk in the front yard.
Oh.
And I'm thinking, and?
Yeah.
And next thing I hear is Ariana's going downstairs with Tracy on speakerphone. Because the skunk wouldn't let her out of the car.
Oh.
And they sitting there, they didn't know what to do.
Well, chase it around the yard. That's a good idea.
Sick
the dog on it.
I walked out front, picked up the dog's chew stick from the front porch, threw it in the general direction. The skunk looks at me. There was also a rock. I threw it in his general direction. Bounces off another rock. That's around our garden.
Yeah.
Scares him. Boom! Gone like a shot.
Yeah, there you go.
Turn around. All right. Go back to bed.
You're safe now.
My job is never done.
Skunks were harmed in this.
Skunks were harmed. No, he's just a little guy that wanders the neighborhood.
Yeah. Okay.
We see him in the morning sometimes, but it's rare that we see him in our front yard. But the birds have been going nuts so lately and, at the bird feeders.
We've got a ton of rabbits this year.
We had.
Like half a dozen rabbits.
Yeah. No, we get them all right at the beginning of the spring. There's tons of rabbits everywhere and all the babies that are around. And then, did you buy kittens?
No.
Okay.
It was too much.
Yeah.
It's like, so if we were, I talked to Sean on the weekend about, hey, we're looking at adopting kittens. How much do you guys pay? So this place, it wants $450 to adopt a kitten, but they'll give you a discount, $600 for two.
Yeah.
Because they have bonded pairs.
That's...
Which would be... Oh.
Uh-oh. HR is...
HR is getting my arm wet.
Right? She's telling you, don't get kittens.
Yeah.
Don't get cats. Buy a dog.
Cats suck.
Right, Athena? Dogs. Buy a dog. Dogs are yes. Cats are no.
Anyways, yeah. So we chose not to buy the $600 kittens.
No. It gets kind of pricey.
Yeah. It is a rescue. It's not like they're purebred cats or something. It's their rescue kittens. Yeah. But this place is not like the SPCA. It's their business. It's called Toe Beans and
Cafe.
Toe Beans Cafe. Yeah.
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 Yeah. No, so, I just go to
the rescue.
The place. Rescue. Yeah. Or PetSmart. They've also always got cats in there, kittens in there.
Yeah. And it's not like you're going to a cat breeder, because I don't agree with that. But you're rescuing animals that somebody had kittens because they were irresponsible and didn't have their pets spayed or neutered. And so
Barker always said, have your cats, dogs spayed or neutered. Yeah, that's one thing we've always, I don't need, as much as I'd love to have 50 puppies running around here, they yeah. get into, turn into yeah. bigger dogs, and you have exactly. 50 full-grown adult dogs exactly. running around yeah. here. I spend my entire day scooping dog poop. Not happening. But just think of how fast that dog sled would go.
Yes.
Could you imagine 50 dogs team. On one sled?
Yeah.
Like, you'd need a seatbelt. Seatbelt and a steering wheel.
Yeah. Yeah, each dog is only pulling about 1 or 2 pounds, 1 pound.
Oh, that Isn't would it? Still be awesome, though. You would need, like, a massively wide-open field.
Yeah.
Like, we're talking going across the prairies with that dog sled.
We're going at warp speed.
Right? Like, I don't know how... Do you think there's a max speed it would go, depending there on how many dogs?
Absolutely a max speed. A dog can only run so fast.
Yeah, but when you get a whole lot of them together, that speed goes
300 kilometers an hour.
His face was peeled back.
I had 1,000 dogs on lead.
It just sheared my eyelashes, scurried off my head.
Anyway.
I had 1,000 dogs at my beck and call. I could feel my sled 1,000 dog power. What's yours got?
Yeah, there's absolutely a limit. Thank goodness.
But it'd
be chaotic.
A lot higher. Oh, yeah, the chaos. Just trying to get them hooked up to this.
One of them wants to stop for a pee.
No, they pee on the go.
I don't think they do.
Spare dog.
Yeah.
But just think of that ride with like 100 dogs.
Yeah.
That would be an awesome ride.
It was 15, then it was 50, now it's 100.
Well, they had more puppies.
Yes, yes, of course. Yes, yes.
1,000 dogs. Be awesome. Going on dogs as far as the eye could see. You got anything else?
I do not.
Sure, got nothing else to talk about?
Nope.
Dog sleds.
Nothing. Rabbits, bunnies,
rabbit sleds. Well, let us know if you get a dog. Then we'll talk.
We've talked about getting a dog, but it's a lot of
walking.
It's a lot of responsibility for me.
For you.
Kids aren't going to do it.
No, no, they don't. Oh, we'll help you with the dog, Dad. Yeah, I raise my hand and call BS on that. That'll last a week till you realize. See, they need to start a business where you rent out a dog to people with kids because their kids want one and the parents don't.
Yeah.
And then when the kids see how much work it is at the end of the week, and then you can take the dog back. Say, thank you.
That's a great idea, but right? I'd be so nervous about having a dog go into a stranger's house and you don't know how they're going to treat it. I'd be nervous about that.
Well, I'd be nervous about that too, but you figure people are going to say, we don't want a dog. Our kids want one, so help us. Give us a really crazy-ass dog.
Give us a bad dog.
Yeah, with one wonky eye and a peg leg. And that, you know, the kids are going to go, yeah, no doubt. Mind you, my kids are probably going, this is the best dog ever. Can we get another one? Rent the dog out.
Yeah.
So that it deters the kids from wanting a dog. But if for some reason they're willing to keep on going, option to buy.
There you go.
Rent with the option to buy.
Rent to own.
Rent to rent own to the own dog. What a bit. How are we not rich? How are we not just rolling in
such
it?
Such a bad business model.
Shut up. Attitude like that. Anyway. If you want to find out more about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. You can download or stream our episodes at iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Player FM, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Or just go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com and you can stream or download all our episodes there. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with your friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.